At Sephora, we know how you love to use makeup, skincare, hair care, and fragrances that work for you, but also how important it is to be in the know about the ingredients that are in them, which is why we created Clean at Sephora. Curated products from brands like Merit, Amika, Summer Fridays, and Fleur that have everything you want, minus certain ingredients you might not. Clean at Sephora is only at Sephora. Shop now at Sephora.com.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Hear that? It's the sound of someone whacking the ground with a rake. Specifically, they're beating around the bush, which we've done enough of in this ad too, so let's get right to it. The new Moneymaker scratch-off from the Ohio Lottery doesn't beat around the bush. Moneymaker. Play the game and you could win money. Up to $2 million. With more than $88 million in prizes, ranging from $50 to $500, Moneymaker cuts right to the cash. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
And they're wagging him with the bases loaded, an intentional walk to Barry Bonds.
2-2 with the bases loaded and one out.
Marcus, oh my God!
Deep to right field, way!
And everybody to episode 138 of the Bases Loaded Fantasy Baseball Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Kurland. You can follow me on Twitter at Mike_Kurland. And today, I have a very special guest, RotoWire's senior editor, host of the RotoWire Fantasy Sports Today on Sirius XM. And, of course, you can catch him on the RotoWire podcast. It's Mr. Jeff Erickson himself. You can follow him on Twitter at Jeff_Erickson. Very similar Twitter handle. So maybe it's like I copied you without trying, but Jeff, thank you for joining me today, man.
No problem. You know, I have that Twitter handle because the Jeff Erickson without an underscore was already taken. You know, there's a professor at the University of Illinois, really smart guy, and he beat me to Twitter, and I feel bad for him because he probably gets a ton of fantasy sports questions. I don't get anything that's directed to him. It's a one-way street here, and so I feel bad for him upon time, especially football season. I think baseball, for whatever reason, baseball Twitter has been more, I'm trying to think of the way, genteel. It's more conversational, whereas football Twitter, it's kind of like, oh, you were wrong about this. I'm far more likely to get a freezing cold take from a football tweet than I am from a baseball tweet.
Yeah, I can't say I've noticed it, so to speak, but I think I don't do football, so like as an analyst. But I feel like it's definitely a whole new world over there, and it's a very different, like alpha type of world, it seems like at times. So I don't know. I like the fantasy baseball side of things. I'm glad that you are here for the fantasy baseball side of things, because now that the Super Bowl happened, which I don't know if you had any rooting interest, but the game was kind of to me. I don't know how you liked it. How was your Super Bowl?
I was rooting for the Chiefs. I went to high school in Kansas, and my parents are Chiefs fans. My brother's a Chiefs fan. I'm actually a Bengals because I grew up in Indiana.
Going for punishment
there. Yeah, so it's my rooting interests are terrible, but it's okay. And the thing is, I like the Chiefs too. I just like the way they like their offense. I like Andy Reid. I love Mahomes, and they just laid an egg yesterday. And you know, the offensive line just had no chance, and so thus Mahomes had no chance. But the defense didn't play well for the Chiefs. Now it's just I wanted a close game too, and it wasn't that.
Yeah, I wanted just because I had no rooting interest. I'm a Dolphins fan. I haven't had rooting interest in the playoffs in years. but it also, and you get as a Bengals fan, you understand that probably has been a while. But anyway,
I haven't won a playoff game since the 90s. Yeah.
Yeah. I'd say you feel that. But this isn't a football podcast. This is a baseball podcast. So we should probably get to the baseball stuff. But yeah, it's officially baseball season, as most people would say. And we're just, again, I'm branching out, getting some guests on. You have your many stops coming up. So I'm glad I grabbed you for this spot. But I want to get to know you a little bit. However, A quick reminder that the Bases Loaded podcast is part of the Roto Baller Radio Network. And with the Bases Loaded podcast continuing as part of the Roto Baller Radio Network, since 2013, Roto Baller has been grinding away, providing millions of fantasy baseball fanatics their fix for in-depth MLB analysis and player news. If you haven't heard, Roto Baller's 2021 MLB Draft Kit is live, and all Bases Loaded pod listeners can get 10% off Roto Baller's Draft Kit by using the discount code BASESLOADED. That's BASESLOADED, all one word. Roto Baller is home to number one Fantasy Pros accuracy ranker Nick Mariano. Nick's 2021 rankings and projections are available as part of the Roto Baller Draft Kit, along with printable cheat sheets, our top draft sleepers, and more than 300 2021 player outlooks and tons of in-season tools. All of this fantasy baseball goodness from Roto Baller is available for 10% off with the discount code BASESLOADED. Just go to rotoballer.com/BASESLOADED and get your draft kit today. And obviously, listeners might know who you are, where you come from, but I don't think I've ever had a chance to really ask you and talk to you about it. So if you don't mind, how did you even get started in the industry as a whole?
So in 1997, actually winter 96, my good friend Peter Shankey, who I'm in a bunch of leagues with, and that's how I got started in fantasy. We went to Northwestern together. He was at the time a reporter for the Wall Street Journal, and he could see the internet wave coming. He could see how it was going to transform information, because we used to do it for fantasy baseball. Trying to get news on our players out of market was ridiculously difficult. You're hoping that they get mentioned on SportsCenter. Otherwise, you're waiting for the news and notes column in USA Today, which is usually a day and a half to 2 days, 3 days later on why your guy missed a game, unless it's a major, major player. So we figured that we noticed that every newspaper was getting online. He noticed this and said, hey, people could use this information. You do well in our leagues. You'd be good on the advice side. I know the technology. I know the business. And our third co-founder, Herb Ilk, wanted to build the website, wanted to build a database. And so the three of us kind of came together. The idea, Peter and I, we went down, did a road trip to the Citrus Bowl, Northwestern versus Tennessee, playing Peyton Manning in his last collegiate game in New Year's Day, 1996. But on that drive from Chicago to Florida and back, we fleshed out the idea a lot and thought about what we're going to do with it and all that. And kind of started it there. I was studying for the bar exam. I should say January 1st, 1997. I was studying for the bar exam, took the bar exam and passed, but never practiced. And we launched, did a little soft launch in like February, and it blew up really quickly. John Hunt noticed us in Baseball Weekly, gave us like a screenshot of the site like three or four different times that first year. And every time our traffic would quadruple. And it was an idea that right idea at the right time. And it just really took off from there, starting with baseball coverage.
And that kind of transitions perfectly into pretty much how much I've even noticed things have changed. I'm still relatively new. I've been around for three or so years. And I've just noticed an influx of content, of people getting into it, podcasts popping up. Mm-hmm. Even five or so years ago, a new podcast wasn't something you find. People weren't starting prep until January or so. You weren't hearing podcasts until January, maybe even early February. Now you have pretty much podcasts year round, different niches being, or niches, however you want to say it, popping up in terms of like what's being covered. And besides that, because I mean, that's a huge thing. Is there anything else that's really stood out to you? I hate to steal your thunder if I did.
Oh, no, not at all. I mean, well, it's just that there's so many different ways to play fantasy, fantasy baseball. I mean, whether it's, You know, the NFBC formats, which have really taken off, whether it's best balls, which are now a huge thing, of course, DFS, there's always something else to do. And, you know, before, you know, we went from like AL only, NL only, those are the only ways to do it. You can only do it in an auction. snake drafts were just, oh, that's just for the people that really don't, are just dilettantes in fantasy baseball. And to now that being the primary format, you know, head to head's a big thing. You know, we're talking about new categories. I play score sheet. I play Stratomatic. I play a lot of different ways. And you realize there's adherence to every single different way. And I want to be able to speak to them all. So I try to play as many as I possibly can. And I feel like I every year I say I'm going to cut back leagues. And then next thing you know, I'm adding one. So who knows? But it really has exploded. And you're right. The podcasting side of things has blown up. The way we analyze completely changed. The more information at our fingertips has just exploded. I mean, first, there was the sabermetric revolution. That wasn't enough. Now we have to have, video. We have, all the StatCast information, just digging into the granular information. Someone like Alex Chamberlain doing all like his pitcher by pitch lists. And he wrote a feature for our magazine, which is Went to the printer on Thursday night, conveniently right before Bauer and Ozuna signed. But
always.
And it's always true. It's always the way it is. If we really wanted to speed up the offseason, we should have accelerated our pub date. But it's really amazing. Just the breadth of information. It's impossible to stay on top of it. There's, you know, Chris from Baseball Pods did the bracket thing last year, and that alerted me to so many great podcasts out there that I wasn't already listening to. And I'm trying to listen to more. I really can't. I have so much bandwidth, you know, but you know, it's just at some point you just have to cut it off. And frankly, you need a break from what you do constantly too. You need other inputs in life. As much as baseball and OBP is life, there are other aspects of life too that I want to enjoy. For instance, my kids. They're not going to be into fantasy best, so I have to spend some other time too. But point is, there's just all this great stuff out there. And, you know, I think if you try to catch all of it, you're going to miss a lot anyhow, because it's just too much. But, you know, the whole point is you can avail yourself to a lot and better yourself over time.
Oh, for sure. And every time it's like, I never thought I knew everything, but I'm always like, okay, cool. Like, I know this, I have a grasp on it. And then somebody comes up with this great new metric and you're like, oh, now I have to learn that. And now it's like, it's ever changing, which is awesome, because that way you can never really get stagnant in your growth. But man, it could be a little overwhelming at times as well. And at what point is there such thing as too much?
It's just a matter, I think, of learning how to parse it, learning how to streamline it. I think that's the important part. There's always been a thing. Baseball's a complicated game. It doesn't lend itself to a quick and easy, you know, hard, fast, you know, these five hard, fast rules. Now, I know there are systems that help. This is not meant to denigrate like Rick Wolf and Glenn Colton for their smart system. It obviously works for them. And it helps distill, it's a starting point. And it helps frame that knowledge. But yeah, there's obviously, I think there's like most things in life, there's too much. You know, you study the law and you can just go in circles trying to study everything. you know, it's studying, especially as a first year in law, it's just overwhelming. Civ Pro, it's just overwhelming the number of rules that you have to try to stay in touch with, and where they apply and where they don't, and all that. I mean, it's an important skill to be able to see what that means. And sometimes you can get lost in the woods easily. I do.
Yeah, I think we all do. And that's why I'm like, if there was anything you would even recommend for somebody wanting to even get started, is there some advice that comes to mind? I know this wasn't part of it, but now I'm just kind of going down this rabbit hole of, like, there's just, because like, it is very overwhelming if you're trying to get into it with no real guidance. And I just, what would you say to somebody who wants to give it a go and maybe where they should start?
You know, that's a great question, because I've been so immersed in this, I haven't had to think about starting. It's like, I don't even have a resume. I don't, you know, I don't have like that fresh powder feeling. I mean, I'm kind of jealous in a way, because, you know, there's so much to explore. We've got like a 101 series on RotoWire. A lot of people do have that, you know, as a starting point. Now, I funny thing is, I've never read the original fantasy baseball, the rotisserie baseball book. I wish I would have. It'd be a fun starting point. I mean, I think you can go a lot of different ways. You know, I'm sure you're pretty familiar with the Baseball Forecaster. I think that does a great job. They're always first out too. I think the best way to learn is just by doing. Get in a league. If you're looking to play for the first time, that's how I do it. As far as like getting in our side of the coin there and being purveyor of information, just write, just talk, just keep doing, share what you know. And maybe it's been done before, but in fact, it probably has, but you know, you may have a different take on it, different way of presenting it. Just keep doing. And hopefully, you know, and of course, share with people, get in conversations, join Twitter. You know, Twitter is not, everyone likes to joke, Twitter's accessible. I like Twitter. I think there are toxic people. Don't respond to them. don't get caught up in the flame war, unless that's your style. But just interact with, you know, when we have conferences again, like First Pitch Arizona, go to them if you can. And that's in it. Maybe, or go to like the sessions that are like 1 day sessions. Go if you can, if you're in New York and during Tau Wars, when we have it live again, go to Tau Wars just to come see it. You know, and ask to help out. Justin Mason is a great example of that. You know, he's trying to get a toehold in the fantasy sports community. And, you know, he's offered to show up at Tau War, said, hey, you know, if you want me to run a board, you know, run a draft board or what, you know, help a chat room or whatever, I'm happy to help. Be an auctioneer, I'm happy to help. And, you know, he did that. He started, you know, he's done this podcast. He's got a site. Now he's, you know, he does Sleeper in the Bust a lot with Paul. You know, he's obviously got TGFBI. He started that, which is, you know, caused great awareness for what we've got in our community too. You know, so many websites and so many people that are good writers and talkers. You know, just, you know, give and you'll get back.
Yeah, and that's honestly like that's advice is very simple, and but it's very, at least from my experience, is very true, because I literally started on a whim because I was listening to a podcast, and I know it was CBS, but I don't remember who. I think I want to say it was Scott White. Okay. And I love, and so I remember it was like 3 or 4 years ago. I was like just sitting there, I'm like, I don't agree with this. I'm like, I guess I have an opinion. And yeah. I love the talk, and I literally just launched a podcast. But one thing I've noticed in just those 3 years, Twitter is huge. You don't need to be on Twitter, but you can get started on Twitter before you even get started putting out content, because Twitter, at least over the last year or so, has been really big on being inclusive, really big Absolutely. On trying to help each other out. People like you are making your rounds on smaller podcasts, helping us with our outreach, and it means a ton to us, and you know that. And that stuff like that is like a big deal to us. And that wasn't as easily accessible a few years back. Or if it was, it didn't appear to be or feel as such. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And the thing is, I've always found that our community has been is fantastic. I mean, yeah. I was the young guy. You got to remember, when I came in 90.
Oh, of course.
Peter and I were so lucky. We got there at the right time, right place. But John Hunt invited us to labor, I think, in 98. And to a man, everyone's like, hey, well, you guys are doing great. We're like, welcome here. You want to meet this guy? You want to meet that guy? Lenny Melnick. It's like, dude, you know, you saved me all this time. I get up at 4 in the morning to read all the newspapers, and now you've got it right here. It's amazing. And, you know, here, let me tell you what you're doing wrong about this and what you're doing right. You know, so many people in the industry. Gene McCaffrey was that way right away. You know, Eric Carabel put me on TV for crying out loud on ESPN News. I mean, that is awesome. Yeah, and Eric's a great guy. And I can go up and down the list. Our community is amazing. And I don't think most industries are like this. Maybe I'm wrong about humanity, but I went to law school, and certainly the legal community was like this. I'm sure there are little pockets like that. You know, you have to gain people's trust and all that. But, you know, we're competing with each other, but I don't see too much of the Coke versus Pepsi sort of wars. I don't see too much of that. And I think that's it's really refreshing. You go to these conferences and it's amazing.
I think the big difference is, especially with baseball compared to other sports, is that there is so much to look at. There's different stats, different players, different positions, league depth, prospects. There's hundreds of people and players to look at and things to talk about. Whereas with other sports like football, there's only so many running backs and it's a lot of the same conversations. And there's a lot of the same conversations happening in baseball. Don't get me wrong. But there's different ways to attack it. Like, I think there's not even different. There's more ways. And because there's so much more to it, that more could be said and more could be discussed, even revolving around the same conversation.
Yeah.
And I think that is what really differentiates baseball from other sports and the community as a whole. Because, like you said, we might be competing, quote unquote, but everybody offers a lot of their own like perspectives on things. But I'm well educated because there's just so many different ways to look at things. It is amazing, but at the same time frustrating, because obviously the only time we get the answer is at the end of the year, but then there's always a justification for almost both sides, and that's where things get a little murky. It's like, look, just take your losses and move on sometimes. But that's I think it's human nature. People just don't like to admit they're wrong. And but although I do see a lot of it on baseball Twitter, so
yeah,
maybe like
yeah.
you said, it's a little unique.
Yeah. And every once in a while, like I was commenting this weekend how sometimes baseball Twitter is becoming DFS Twitter a little bit more, but that's fine. But that can always be in good, clean fun, too. I mean, I was kind of being a little facetious when I tweeted that, but it was kind of funny. You know, the thing is, we all love baseball and we all love gaming. I mean, that's two ways to unite us there, right then and there. And, yeah. It's no longer the total nerdy geeky thing. Now keep in mind, I am nerdy and geeky both.
So am I. But,
it is no longer like the thing that's spurned. I mean, now yeah. everyone's like, oh, it used to be fantasy. Like, I was on jury service one time and the judge asks everyone what you do for a living. He goes, fancy sports. Oh, fantasy, like Dungeons and Dragons. And I go, no, fantasy, like fantasy football. And he made some other crack. And it's like, he was almost in a little position like, I'm sitting here and I'm going to put you down there. And you know, like three people afterward that were in the group was like, dude, I'm in a fantasy league. What's your site? And I'm like, oh, you're RotoWire. Oh, that's awesome. And so that was pretty cool. But, you know, and it's like, yeah, I'm a recovering attorney. I feel pretty good about that.
Yeah. No, no kidding. And honestly, man, it's fantastic that fantasy has become almost quote unquote mainstream, especially on the football side. Baseball still has some catching up to do, but baseball on both sides of things, real life and fantasy, have a lot of catching up to do, unfortunately, when it comes to appealing to the masses, appealing to the younger crowd, because baseball hates its fans. But
well, and I think they spend so much time trying to aspire to what they're not, and instead of building up what they do have, you know, they anti-market themselves all the time. Look at all this obsession that Manfred has with speeding up the game. You know, it's a great game. Let it breathe. You know, no one cares when this, you know, Super Bowl is like 4 hours long every year. And you rarely hear people complaining about how long it takes. You know, don't try to be the NBA. Don't try to be the NFL. You're baseball. You know, I get, you know, the game can pick up, be slow at times. Some of that is just because of the how hard it is now. I mean, it's played at a level that's so hard to explain. Yeah, try to step into a box against some of these pitchers here and just see how embarrassing it would be.
Like Devin Williams,
the,
man.
The movement that they have on those pitches at the speed.
Yeah.
What was it? Adam Ottavino said he'd strike out Babe Ruth. He's not wrong. He's right.
Yeah, 100%. And that's the thing. And that whole era for era thing, like in terms of just trying to compare the two, it doesn't work out. Because of that, because today's game is completely different than even 15 years ago, like 10 years ago, let alone 100 years ago. So, right. I totally agree with Ottavino saying that, because Babe Ruth wasn't seeing Ottavino's stuff. He didn't have to be in shape like these players do these days to be able to hit the stuff that they were hitting either.
Now, would Babe Ruth catch up? Probably. Almost absolutely so. But the point is, you know, frozen in time, you know, it's just a different game. Completely different.
Like, let's put Barry Bonds and Mark McGwire down in that era. Same thing. They would dominate absurdly, but would the times catch up to them? You know, there's the whole thing. It's like, I'm sure eventually it would even out if you give them time, but it's just, you can't do that.
Yeah.
But then again, they probably would have, I don't know, steroids were a thing back then too. I mean, they weren't commonplace in baseball back then, probably.
Throughout time, humans have looked for an edge in whatever endeavor there is in life. And if steroids existed, then they would have used
probably. You know what? Good point. But speaking of edge, 2020, I feel like none of us have one entering 2021 because of how crazy 2020 is. People look at the numbers, including myself. We look at the numbers. We sit there and think we figured something out. But then when we start thinking of just the game itself, it was unlike any season we've ever seen. Divisions were changed. People played different teams they probably won't see as much in a full season this year. Just so much about last year was crazy and off. And that alone is hard to quantify because you can't put that into the numbers, so to speak. And how much of 2020 are you really factoring into your player outlooks or your overall draft strategy? And did you learn anything from 2020 that you might stick with 2021, being that we still are going to deal with COVID and all that.
Right. And you saw the report today from Ken Rosenthal.
Yes.
Dude, I mean, they're going to change the ball. They're going to use more humidors. Five more parks are going to use humidors. And, you know, it's funny. Like, there used to be a saying that we only use 10% of our brain. I don't think that's true. It's been debunked a little bit. But the point is, we use a fraction of our brain. And that applies to, like, R&M. We have a capacity to figure out a fraction of the game, to figure out, you know, we can't really figure out baseball. We can figure out a part of it there. We can figure out certain players sometimes for portions of a season, maybe, but we never have it fully solved. And it's not just because the puzzle keeps moving, but it's hard to begin with. They're dynamic figures. They change. You know, if this certain pitch isn't working, they're going to change it. And thus a long time, you know, all of a sudden you get these big dramatic changes in performance.
No, 100% agree. And 2020 is just one of those weird things. Like, it's hard to determine what's real, what's not. Now, things like maybe a pitch mix change might make you more optimistic on a player. Some velo, upping your velo might have helped. But how many of these pitchers knew that they can kind of get away with putting a little more into their pitches, knowing that the season was shorter? Maybe they weren't worried about fatiguing. And that's another thing. A lot of these players never hit fatigue or didn't have a chance to because the season was shorter. And there's just so much. It's like hard to really pinpoint the right process. And every year we have problems, you know, every year no one's 100% right, obviously. So coming off 2020, It's just I'm really having a hard time just figuring out how much do I weigh it, though.
Yeah, I do too. And I use 3-year weighted averages, and I always, you know, you're supposed to do the third year, the most recent year, is supposed to be almost half the equation. Well, you only have 60 games. How can it be that way, Case? Because we always argue about sample size. What's a stable sample set, and for what stat? I mean, it's a nightmare to try to project, to do a numerically based projection. And yet here we are, and I've got to do it. We spent a lot of time today on the SiriusXM show with Lisa and I talking about how projections, you know, are inherently misleading. You know, it's, you know, it only shows a 50th percentile in the best of in the best of cases. And it can be a lot. It shows what's right and wrong. Well, say if it goes right, it stays healthy all year. It's really not showing guys upside. It doesn't show improvement at all. It can be terribly missed.
And that's why even like I'm not an anti-projection guy. I just look at it like the projections are part of the puzzle for me, because I go into what I try to do. And I know there's like no real world way that there's time to do this for the player pools. And we're going to get into, because we play into deeper formats as well. You know, you mentioned some only leagues, NFBC mm-hmm. formats. There's no way you're getting your eyes on 750 individual players. Even like I've started doing this in November, and I'm probably at close to 300, and that's still not enough these days. But right. what I've tried to do, especially with 2020, is put my eyes on as many players as possible and really dive into what happened month to month, game logs. Like I'm really putting forth my best effort, but I'm not gonna have enough time, and it's not gonna be enough, because at the end of the day, it's still just 60 games.
Yeah, but you know what, though? What it's going to do is give you a familiarity with them there, and then you use that as a leaping point. And you start doing this. You look at these guys over and over. It becomes a little nestled in your subconscious. Your recall becomes better. You remember, oh, yeah, I remember this, and you can draw a parallel to it. And that's one of the advantages of doing it. Now, one of the things I liked what you've done is you found a niche. You found a niche with, like, analyzing the lineups every day, pointing out what's noticeable, and you know, Twitter is a great medium for starting that, and you've refined that over time. And you know, going back to your earlier question about someone getting started, find something you're good at and dig into that, explore that space a little bit more, and you'll spread a little farther and farther over time. But you know, finding that starting point is great. You know, most people don't find a niche. And the fact that you did it on one area at least, you're ahead of the game.
Oh, I got very lucky. I say it all the time. I got lucky/fortunate. Like I found it intriguing following daily lineups in spring training last year. I was like, this is, and the first thing where I was like, the first claim to like this working was when I saw when Mercado came back from injury, that they slid him down to seventh anyway and kept putting Hernandez at the top of the lineup. And people kept arguing with me. I was like, no, this is just, this lineup is consistent. There's not like they're getting more. There's no reason to get at bats for Hernandez. He's a proven veteran. You get at bats for the young guy, right. But the young guy is still sitting at the bottom of the lineup. And then the trends picked up in summer camp, and I'm like, it's still there. And I was like, people picked up on it and were accepting it. But it was met with a lot of pushback. So yeah, it just happened to be. I found a lot of intrigue in that. And then by putting it out on Twitter, like you said, it's a great medium for something like that because there's instant reaction. I get positive and negative feedback, or not even negative feedback, more pushback of like they don't buy it. I'm just like, hey, this is the trend I'm seeing. So yeah, now I'm refining it into a weekly article and all that, and going to add to it. It's going to be a lot of fun this year. I'm really looking forward to seeing where I could take it, because you're right. I found this niche, and I just don't want to let it go now, because I feel like there's only one way to go with it, and it's built on it.
Right, and it's, of course,
definitely exciting. But yeah, like you said, though, it's very, very hard to find that, because I just fell into it because I found something I was very interested in. Not that it's not possible. Heck, someone could come doing it better than me. You're right. It's because it's hard to be original. So if you could find something you're really good at, even if someone else is doing it, just try to be unique with it. Just don't copy the idea. That's all I ask for. Like, yeah. It's one thing, like you people, again, we're not original. I mean, maybe you are, but you know what I mean? Like, it's hard. This day and age, it's really difficult for me to do something that's original. Because
everything derives from something, though. You know,
yeah.
It's really, really rare to come up with, you know, something that isn't inspired by something else. I mean, usually yes. it's a problem, or you see one statement, and then you kind of go, you know, unravel from there. And maybe you find a different take on something, and then that's part of it there. Yeah. And sometimes it's build a better robot, but usually it's like build a different robot.
Yeah. Yeah. I completely know what you're trying. I get what you're saying. It's tough. I know the way of putting it, but it's tough.
It is.
But before I let you get out of here, I don't want to give away all your secrets. I told you this before we started. So, and I know you play in a lot of deep leagues. A lot of people listen to what you say. So I figured three players outside the top 300 ADP. And I should have referenced NFBC ADP because that's kind of like the main ADP data we have.
It's my go-to.
Yeah, that's usually my go-to as well. It's almost like the industry standard now for podcasts because it's the first ADP data we have until, you know, Yahoo and all of them open up. But regardless, I'm rambling. So I figured I'd give you a chance to talk about three players that you like. I didn't ask for your favorites. Again, I don't want to give away all your secrets.
I've got three hitters for you.
I love hitters.
I tried to go non-Reds just because, you know, I want to avoid the bias. Oh, yeah. Otherwise,
you could have gone.
But I will say both closer candidates right now are in the 300s. And maybe a TJ Antone you want to include, but I think he starts. But anyhow, besides those guys, though, Edwin Rios for the Dodgers. Justin Turner signs with them. Okay, all bets are off. Fine. But for now, he's going to get most of the third base starts. He can play some first. You know, they're going to find ways to get that bat in the lineup. And all he does is rake, just crushes the ball. He's older than you think. He's 26 already. So, and in fact, turns 27 in April. So it's not like this is young up and comer, but just look at his minor league stat log. You look everywhere he's gone, he's raked, including with the Dodgers last year. Yeah, he's not going to run at all. So that's one thing to keep in mind. But you get a guy that's third base eligible, get a late third baseman there who could play his way into regular playing time and a great lineup. His ADP currently is 329 in the NFBC. My projections spit him out at 211. Now, keep in mind, that's without any sort of context, but I'm going to end up getting him frequently.
Yeah, Rios is a guy that he's been like a fantasy baseball darling, like an industry darling already early in the early drafts, and he's slowly creeping up people's boards because people are starting to buy in more and more especially now that they have Bauer. The money, not that, well, I shouldn't say the money won't be there. It's the Dodgers. But maybe they're less inclined to spend on Turner because Turner wants what? I thought I saw a report for like a three or four-year deal or something he's looking for.
Yeah, I kind of try to blow off most because, that's more likely. It's just typically I think that's, a lot of funny stuff. I mean, we see Nightingale being famously wrong on Thursday night or on Friday. So, I try to just, okay, it sounds like he's going to sign. I mean, if the local reporter says something, I'm more inclined to buy into it. With football, there's this established hierarchy. If Glazer says something, it's going to happen. If Schefter says something, it's likely to happen. If Rappaport says that he's just trying to be first. That's usually the way I go with that. And I treat Nightingale the same.
Yeah, I see that. Passan, for me, is the guy that if he says it, I believe it.
Same. I agree. Yeah. I played a score sheet lead with Passan, by the way.
Nice. That's awesome. Great shameless dude. Plug. He seems like a cool dude.
Yeah, he is. It dates back to when he was still writing for the KC Star. So he's been in the league for a while. It's an NL-only score sheet league. Sean Foreman's in that league. He's awesome, obviously. It's a tough league. It's a very tough league.
Sure.
I happen to be in like a division of death. Nate Stevens is another guy that some people might have heard of. He's written for Roto World before. I think he still does a little bit, but great, great. And Passan, Nate, and I are all in the same division, four-team division. So it's just like we're just at each other's throats every single year. It's crazy.
Now, does he use his advantage the way he should, or does the league kind of stop that from being able to happen?
You know, honestly, because it's the way score sheet works, it's very infrequent that we're so deep. There's no it's not like, okay, he's been named the closer, jump on him. First of all, score sheet doesn't, and that's part of it too. A score sheet, you're building a real life lineup. You can have whatever. Devin Williams could be your closer last year. It doesn't matter how many saves he got. It matters how good a pitcher he is, which I like. So it's more about player evaluation. So that the information advantage that you might have is limited for him. It's all about player analysis. So I like good. That.
So you have the, I would say you have the edge then.
I've won in that league a couple of times, but I'm by far not the beast out there. I mean, it's a great league. Like I said, very difficult. King Kaufman he's no longer in the league, but he started. He's now, I don't think he writes sports anymore. He's more doing the political side of things, but he's another good writer that was in this league. Point is, a tough league.
So it sounds like a lot of fun though, man. I mean, I don't know about you, like those types of leagues are kind of my favorites because it's more than just fantasy at that point. There's a true competition there. It's a long established league.
Yep.
It's a lot of fun. That's what you gotta love. And that's what you gotta love about TGFBI. Similar idea. It's long established. More people join every year, and it's going up against everybody. Some people take it more serious than others, unfortunately. But for the most part, most people take it serious, and it's a good time.
Yeah. Well, that's why you need to get side bets going, so you have some skin in the game.
Yeah.
That changes. That'll get you to try all year. That's for
sure. I was going to say, didn't Vlad last year put a little something out there? Is he going to do it again, Vlad Sedler?
I assume he would. I'm having Vlad on next Thursday on the podcast. So I'll ask.
That's a good question because I know I'd be in on it this year. Last year, I was a little apprehensive. 60 games, I was like, I'm not really interested. But this year, sure. I'm all for that. That little secondary pool of his. But getting back on track, Evan Rios, yeah, he was interesting. I looked into him a little bit as well. You know, the change in launch angle, getting the from 9.1 degrees to 14.5. He smashed the ball, like you mentioned, a 45.8% hard hit rate, barrel rate of 13.6%. The guy just gets good, solid contact and just puts the ball like out of the park and hits it really hard. That's all there. The only issue is the strikeouts. He did show, obviously, improvement there at 21.7%, but it's just some of the contact concerns are still there when you look under the hood. So maybe he's like a better Joey Gallo in terms of the power not being as good, but the batting average could be a little better. So it's like, that's why I feel like the comp is there, because the power, you mentioned, he just rakes and he's a lefty, so it's like instantly comes to mind Joey Gallo, but one that can hit the ball a little more frequently.
Yeah,
so
I really like K it as frequently, but yeah, That's the one thing. There's probably going to be a lot of volatility in that batting average. I'm probably a little too much on the bullish side about that. In fact, even last year, he caught fire at the end of September. He was like 196 on September 15th and blitzed in the stretch. Yeah. So, yeah, you know, 240 is still a possibility. 220 is still a possibility. But I have him at 260, which maybe I'm a little too rosy on that.
But the good news is that his ADP – You can take the hit at the batting average. Absolutely. Because he's going to give you a plus power and probably RBIs and all that, depending on where he hits in the lineup.
Next guy on my list, Alex Dickerson. The if only he could stay healthy guy. He stayed healthy, and we saw what he could do. He can hit for average. He can hit for power. He's kind of a slow version of Mike Yastrzemski. You know, at least the 2020 Mike Yastrzemski, because people weren't really buying in on him last year, and you got him around 300. This year, you know, you're actually paying a little bit more for him. Dickerson, his ADP is 335, and I think he's going to play a lot. I mean, maybe Kapler tries to platoon him a little bit here and there, and that could hurt him a little bit. But I see a guy that, you know, doesn't strike out a ton. You know, it was like 17.6% last year, and he hits for some power. The ballpark isn't as punitive as it used to be. Now, we'll see how that plays out over a full season, but those fences aren't moving back. So there's a guy that could be, I think, you know, outfielders, like, it's always nice to find late outfielders. That's one I land on a lot.
Yeah. And Dickerson is a guy that I'm a sucker for batting plate discipline. So when you mentioned the strikeout rate, that, you know, he's a career 18.2% guy, career 8.4% walk rate, and he showed that same skill in the minor. So that's something that's just followed him. And then the swing and miss isn't terrible. He does chase a little more than league average, but he still has a swing and strike rate less than league average, right around 10.7% with decent contact rates, which makes sense. So there is a floor there. And I do, and again, when you're getting somebody that late, you either go for an Edwin Rios type, like you mentioned, because he gives you a plus skill, or you fall back on a guy who offers a little of everything in terms of the four categories, because he should hit top of the lineup more days than not, and has like a solid foundation in terms of a hit tool and plate discipline. So I like the Alex Dickerson. I like that pick.
Thanks. And I'll give you one more hitter. Nick Ahmed. Shortstop is a sexy position. Nick Ahmed is not that. However, he's a solid floor guy. He's going to give you a modicum of power, a modicum of speed, 81st percentile sprint speed, bankable batting average floor, I feel like, and a little bit of power. He's not a zero there. You know, you're looking at filling your middle infield spot at this point in time. Yeah, you're looking to maybe, if you took a chance, say, like Adalberto Mondesi is one of your shortstops, one of your middle infielders, a guy with that much volatility, you know, he could win you stolen bases, but he could also lose playing time because he's so volatile. I mean, it's good to have your middle infielder then be a shortstop or have another shortstop. Ahmed's going to play, and he's going to provide a decent floor. And I know that Arizona is not the greatest place to hit. But if it's true that five more ballparks are adding humidors and the ball's going to be a little deader, maybe that narrows narrows that down a little bit there a little bit too. So I think he's a safe guy to have. And again, it's like, he costs you nothing. 362 ADP.
Yeah, and again, it goes back to just some of these leagues that you're in. You have to remember, playing time is a priority, especially when you get deeper in drafts. And he has that, and that right there carries some of the value. And again, that kind of brings things like you mentioned a little bit of power, a little bit of speed. I think there's a I'm trying to think of the word, an accumulation kind of thing with him. Is like, you know, as long as he plays, he'll kind of just run into those stats, so to speak.
Yes, exactly. And I like that. I mean, late in the draft, you know, it's good to find one of those guys. So yeah, I think that's the guy, and that's kind of, it fits the playing style. Say if you know, again, you don't want to have all floor guys late, but I think a couple of those are useful to have and allows you to take a chance, like on a Wander Franco. So say if Franco takes a lot longer to get called up, well, slot in Ahmed until he's ready and you'll be fine. You'll get plenty of production. And, you know, every player has a ceiling. Every player has an upside that sometimes it's not palpalable. And then Rick Porcello wins an MVP, wins a Cy Young award. It happens, you know. So finding floor guys isn't necessarily limiting your
upside. Yeah, and then you also, like you mentioned, you kind of have to do that whole add these stats in while that guy gets ready. Then you put those stats and you just put it all together and you get one really good player. I can't think of the term right now, so I rambled on about it. But regardless, so your three guys were Evan Rios, Alex Dickerson, and Nick Ahmed. Jeff, yes. I appreciate your time. I wasn't sure. I think that was everything. That was three guys. I only asked for three. So, yeah. All right, cool.
But you're going to give me one of yours?
I'm very, very open. I didn't bring mine, but I can. Evan Rios is actually on one of my lists. I actually like Joey Wendell a little bit. I know he's not sexy. Sure. I know he's not. He's probably on a strong side of a platoon at best. But what I like about him is the potential for a little bit of power and speed, mostly speed and batting average, I should say. The power is not a zero, but you'll be lucky to get double digits. But in 2018, he played 139 games, and in that season, he stole 16 bags, hit 300. And it's like he hasn't really been healthy. And when he's healthy, he tends to kind of give you that type of production. I mean, the guy, he gives you like elite level zone contact rates. The Z contact of 94.4% was in 2020, and he's never actually been under 90% for his major league career. So that type of zone contact rate is, like I said, it's elite level, and it's coming from a guy that you're getting outside. He's at 306 since January 1st, or at least that's what it was per my notes. Again, I'm pulling this guy out of one of my articles I wrote, he's the guy that I'm really liking because you can get that contact rate, which should lead to a solid floor and batting average, to 270-ish, I'd say, would be the floor in my opinion. And then you're getting double-digit stolen bases. Not sexy, not flashy, but again, a guy you just plug in there, get your speed late, your batting average late. And you know the Rays. If he's on the strong side of a platoon and shows he can hit both sides, they'll run him out there until he can't hit both sides anymore.
Right.
So
and the defense plays. I mean, he's so good defensively. We all saw that layoffs. And you know, the sprint speed metrics underscore like his stolen base upside. And that was one of the things that kind of, you know, because he didn't have great stolen base numbers the previous year in 2019, but the sprint speed was there and it kind of indicated, hey, he's got stolen base upside. He and Teoscar were both kind of guys like that you could find. And it worked out. So, I'm on board with Wendell. And the thing is, I don't know how many positions he qualifies this year. I know definitely third, but I know he had multiple positions previously. Where is he qualified this year?
I want to say at least second and third this year.
I think you're right.
I'll look it up real quick. Again, I came prepared to highlight yours, and now scrambling. I got this, though.
Put you on the spot. You know,
it's fine. I love talking. Trust me, I could talk players all day. That's never an issue.
Second, third, and short if you play in NFBC. So that's pretty handy. Keep in mind, it's only seven games to qualify there.
Yeah, so he's probably going to sustain that, I would think, this year. But regardless, again, he's probably – I know it's a little – I think 300 – like we're seeing right around 300 can be a little steep for a guy that might not play full-time. But in roto formats, and again, we're talking about 162-game season, it's easier to absorb a strong side playing a platoon guy versus like last year where every game counted. This year, you can kind of take a breath again. You know, it's nice. So we can breathe a little bit.
Yeah, and exactly.
But yeah, he was the first guy that came to mind because he's somebody I've written up recently, and it was just the hit tool paired with the plus speed potential. That skill set plays late for me because I tend to attack other things throughout the draft, and that's kind of a nice, what I would call a roster stabilizer. I kind of just plug in, set, and forget. And a real deep league guy I'll throw out there in general is Brandon Marsh. I don't attack prospects early in deeper formats. But later I do. I'm all about taking them later, especially when they're likely to be up soon or in AAA and probably be up at least half a year. And Brandon Marsh is, in my opinion, will get there. I mean, he was in AA in 2019. He was in the alt site last year. The batting average can be questionable because the strikeouts, you know, he's shown to have some issue with them. Not necessarily terrible, but because they're there, you know, the 300 batting average he put up in 2019, I wouldn't bank on. But the stolen bases and the power there, he put up 18 that year, stolen bases, 7 home runs. And I think he can come up, and with his walk rates always being north of 10%, essentially, that will play to his on-base skills, and he should be able to run for a team that will probably need to manufacture runs. So a lot of that, like that skill set is kind of like, it's that power-speed combination with a track. I see an inside track to playing time sooner than later from the minors. I think he beats Joe Adell back up, to be honest.
I think so, too. I think they're pretty clear that Adell needs time in the minors to improve on his hitting side of the equation. Even in the defensive side, we saw that the off-the-glove homer last year. We all saw that. But, you know, and when your impediments are Dexter Fowler and Justin Upton, you know, it's a pretty clear sign that it's not going to take much. Now, I think they traded for Fowler just to buy themselves some time with both Marsh and with Adell. But it's not exactly the immovable objects there either. So, yeah, I think we see him by June.
And that's a guy going almost pick 600, like, or at least, again, this is not updated ADP, so that was pick 600, but still outside the top 500. So that's a guy that's going really deep. You can fall back on AL only drafts, and my favorites are DCs. I play draft champions a lot. Yep. And he's a guy, him and Jared Oliva, guys I love to fall back on for those, like two of the rookies I draft almost as often as possible. So see, I give away my secrets, because if someone's gonna have to reach to get them, because it's not like I'm taking them at their ADP. So
yeah, you're willing, they'll leave you something else if they take your guy.
So yeah, fine. So exactly. So it's like I've always been one of those. Here's my people. Do what you want with it. Good for you if they hit. But if I miss, joke's on you as well. But right. but in all seriousness though, Jeff, I appreciate you joining me, man. Again, plug all your work on the way out.
Yeah, no problem. Well, you guys can check it all out. Rotowire.com/free gets you a free 10-day trial. You can check out my work and everybody else's work. You can catch me on SiriusXM. We're on 12 to 2 Monday through Thursday, and I'm also on Sundays from 1 to 3 Eastern time, and then doing 3 podcasts a week now, and our whole crew is going. Clay and James are doing the Prospect Pod on Wednesdays. Clay and Todd Zola on Friday are together. It's all on baseball now. You know, the Super Bowl's over. It's a traditional starting point for fantasy baseball season, even if the work's been being done 3 months prior. We, you know, now everyone's kind of focusing on that now again, too, so we're excited. Spring training is right around the corner. It's awesome.
Don't forget, everyone, you could check him out on Twitter as well, at Jeff_Erickson. And don't forget as well, on your way out, 5-star rating review is greatly appreciated. But of course, we appreciate you tuning in. And until next time, we'll talk to you soon.